Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey, if you suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
You could not live with your own failure. Where did that bring you? Back to me.
Welcome in Houston. John and Lance are out this week, and you know it can only mean one thing. It's the audition with Del Olale. Join Del all week as he auditions various sports radio talents in his relentless pursuit to find the perfect co-host. Now live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, it's Del Olale and his second audition, Brad Kellner.
When the world was a sign with this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we hear in the world something else. We could leave any day or call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk.
That's right, the audition rolls on, and we're joined by a familiar face. For some of you, at least if you recognize that name that the voiceover guy gave you, Brad Kellner is in the building to join the audition. And I would guess you can call Brad the least abrasive version of the Wheelhouse, or host of the Wheelhouse. If we're talking about the reactions of the rest of the lineup, I know there's a back and forth between the bench and one of your co-hosts, Jake, and then Cody and Jeremy Branham have their thing. I don't think I've heard you in those back and forths.
Dale, have you seen the movie Semi-Pro?
I've seen parts of it, but not the whole thing.
There's a motto that Will Ferrell uses in that movie, E-L-E. Everybody love everybody. And that's me. That's the motto that I follow. So I got no beef with anyone here at the station. So I'm good on all of this, but I can't speak for the other two knuckleheads I work with.
Yeah, I've heard the names they've been called, and just because of what Jake allegedly has done or not done, he's gotten a name. It's not pretty, but do you think if we had a blind poll and just had, or a blind vote, would you be the most likable version? Or host of the Wheelhouse?
No, I do take a lot of shots at the blind, so I don't know if they would vote very highly.
If you're taking shots at the blind, I don't think the blind people are your only problem. That's one group of people who have like a great Q rating. I don't think you could get away with it. Like, I don't think anyone has said anything negative about the blind, maybe ever.
They just can't see.
Well, yeah, but that's for the most part not their fault.
No.
So this is what I'm saying. If you take a shot at the blind, I don't know how you win.
Yeah, that's true.
It's brave, I will say that. But because this is the audition and we're just trying to figure out who people, I don't know, some people listen to radio and they have a certain segment. They listen from 7 to 10 or whatever. Maybe they don't get to hear you on the Wheelhouse as much. So I want to kind of introduce you to those people currently by asking you a couple questions. And depending on what the answers are, you'll get a response of yay or nay from our unbiased judge, RJ.
Okay.
RJ will be the one to tell you whether your answers are good or not. So these are just a couple of questions to find out kind of who Brad is, at least in short form, because, you know, no one is as simplistic as, oh, he likes this or that. But here we go. Brad, first question, Warped Tour or BuzzFest?
BuzzFest.
Okay. That I won't judge. This is RJ judging. So any responses you get, negative or positively, will come from our producer. Fast 10 or Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning? I don't know if you've seen them, but if you had a choice, which one would you choose?
I mean, I've seen neither of them. I think I've seen, is the second one you mentioned a Mission Impossible movie?
Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 is the new Tom Cruise Mission Impossible movie.
I've seen one Mission Impossible in my life, and I've seen two Fast and Furious movies in my life, so I guess I got to go with Fast 10.
Okay, so you're well, already. I was going to wait to the end, but already RJ is responding to your answer. Well, that's if people missed the Monday show. Lowered Expectations was a sketch from Mad TV where let's just say the not the most desirable dating options got together because that's the only people they could get. It was a lot of settling, so that's where that soundbite comes from. And apparently, RJ, you are you Mission Impossible over Fast 10.
No, I'm a Fast and Furious trilogy.
He like picked, Dynasty. but he picked Fast 10. So why'd you hit him with the lowered expectations?
He said neither. Didn't you say neither?
I said I've only seen a couple of them, but I chose Fast 10.
So, yeah. Oh, so that's my fault. That's my fault.
Okay.
Wow, that's an improper use of lowered expectations already. 4 minutes into the show. Okay, so you got a reprieve. Apparently, you are good there. Going to the beach or floating the river.
Ooh, going to the beach.
Okay.
Folks live in Galveston, go down there a lot. That's got to be my choice. I am a fan of both, but if I got to pick one, we're going to the beach.
Going to the beach.
Yeah.
Favorite streaming service?
On TV?
Yes. Are you not a TV person?
No, I am. I wasn't sure if you were talking about like Spotify or
Apple. Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. I need to clarify. Favorite TV streaming service?
Which one has the most sports on it?
Probably Hulu Live, but let's go recorded programming, whether it be reality shows or dramas or comedy, recorded programming.
I'm basic. Netflix.
Okay.
That's what I watch the most.
Netflix.
Yeah. I feel like there's the most stand-up comedy on there, and usually when I'm watching a streaming service, I'm watching stand-up, so I'll go with that.
Yeah, Netflix is the king at this point of stand-up comedy. That's kind of their bag right now. The original flavor or the spicy alternative of a food?
Ooh, spicy alternative.
All right.
Yeah.
And finally, and most important, Jake or Cody?
For what?
For anything. I don't know. The show, hanging out. I don't know what it is.
Oh, man. You're asking a parent to pick their favorite child right here. And everyone has one.
Everyone has one.
Not allowed to say.
So you can't use that as an excuse because everyone has a favorite.
Mm. Well, for the sake of this week and me being on this show right now, I'm going to go with Cody. Because Jake is the reason that John and Lance are suspended.
Oh, that's the bit we're going with?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're out for the week because of the beef that we got in.
Yes, because Jake would that particular thing would send those two mandatorily suspended because that's how that would work out. So, RJ, you've heard all his answers. Where you stand on Brad Kellner after his responses to the questions?
I like it, man. Listen, I've always vibed with BK. I mean, since we first got here. So, you know, I like BK. Was happy that he was going to be co-hosting with Dell. I said this is going to be a good day. So, BK, I'm happy that you're here with us this morning, man.
Happy to be here.
Look
appreciate
at that. Big fan.
Come on.
Appreciate you, RJ. Appreciate you, Brad, for stepping in today. So, we get to know a little bit about Brad, and we transition to an Astros team whose 8-game winning streak comes to an end. I mean, if you're going to lose and the streak is going to come to an end, outside of the whole Altuve thing, and we'll get to that, thankfully not as bad as it might have seemed initially, lose that way. I mean, six, you're never in it. So surprisingly enough, the one kind of spark you had, Jose Abreu, you ended it really quickly with swinging at a ball out of the strike zone. Jeremy Peña followed up with swinging at an even worse pitch. So you had two on in the sixth because Tucker and Alvarez reached in a wild pitch. So you had a chance to get back in the game, and that fell by the wayside. So the Astros go down 6-0. And I think you put up the note about Montero having another, let's just say, not so solid outing.
Oh, he was horrible last night. And look, the Astros offense didn't do anything. You're not going to win any games if you don't score any runs. So you can't put the entire loss on Montero. But yeah, he was horrible. Gave up 4 runs in the 8th inning. It was 2-0 at the time. He felt like the Astros still had a chance. They were very much in the game. And then he goes out there and lays another egg. And yeah, Dell, his season ERA is up to 7.32. And in the month of May, he's had 8 appearances this month. He's allowed 14 hits and been tagged for 13 earned runs. I mean, he has been absolutely terrible. And it's kind of funny and fitting that outing happened with Jeff Bagwell in the booth because Baggy had to answer for it, right? He talked about Jose Abreu a couple of days ago and had to kind of answer for his struggles. And well, last night he was talking about Rafael Montero as he was just letting the game get out of hand in the 8th inning. The Astros' bad offseason just continues to be bad. They've got enough talent on their roster. They're still going to be fine, and they are fine right now. They've been playing some damn good ball as of late. So hopefully this doesn't sound like I'm pressing the panic button or anything close to that, but the bad off season, which, hey, some of these moves were questioned at the time, Dell. They've played out to be horrible moves. So frustrating last night watching Montero go out and do what he did again.
How do you approach covering this team? Because they're really good, and they have been for a long time, and baseball is all about this marathon, and because of what they've been and what we expect them to be, this is a team we should be talking about in October, and hopefully with, you know, how long season goes, maybe early November. But is everything an existential crisis when what are we going to do with Abreu? Because can he be in a playoff lineup, or do you like approach this game by game? Because what else can you do?
Right, it's kind of a fine line to walk in this business, Dylan. You obviously know this. You've been doing this for a long, long time. But, like, most people realize the Astros are going to be fine. Yeah, they've had some struggles this season, especially before the 8-game win streak that they were on. But this team's track record is what it is. I mean, they're proven, they're experienced. And, look, as long as they make it to the playoffs, I think they're going to be fine. Like, I really don't care that much if they win the division. Of course, you want to win the division. You want to get home field throughout. That makes sense. But the Astros have won so many big games away from home in the postseason. Like, as long as they get in the dance, I think they've got a chance to make some noise. So, overall, yeah, I still feel really, really good about this team. But you got to talk about them game by game and analyze what's actually going on with the team. And, look, this team offensively has not been very good. Now, the pitching staff outside of Rafael Montero has been really solid. Like, going into last night's game, I haven't checked the stat, but my guess is they're still at the top of the league in terms of team ERA. So you can nitpick and criticize individual players, guys who haven't been as good as they were last year, but overall, the pitching for this team, I mean, it's been the best in baseball, so you can't be critical there. But this offense, I mean, they rank in the 20s in a lot of major statistical categories. So, yeah, I think they're going to be fine. I trust them in October, and obviously getting Jose Altuve back is going to make a big difference for everybody 1-9. But this offense just hasn't been good. And for me to, like, really feel like, okay, not just the Astros are going to be fine and they're going to make the playoffs, Dell. For me to really feel like, hey, they are the favorites to repeat as world champions, I'm going to need to see a little bit more from the offense. And it starts with the guys that are being paid to produce, like Jose Abreu, like Alex Bregman. Like, you need more from both of those guys. And obviously there's levels to this, like Abreu way more than Breggy right now. But, yeah, it's sort of a fine line. It's sort of a balance where you talk about the team and you're questioning and you're criticizing and you're being maybe over-analytical at times, but also at the end of the day you realize things are probably going to be okay.
That's kind of my approach. John is the everything's terrible and then everything's great depending on the game. And I'm like, you know, you've been covering this team the last half decade and you know they're going to be okay.
Yeah,
that's my approach. And whether it ends in a World Series win or another division title, this team will be in contention because they have set a standard in this town and really all of baseball that says, don't worry about us, we'll figure it out. Doesn't matter if a pitcher gets hurt, maybe a couple of pitchers get hurt. They find a way to find guys who produce, and I'm with you. When October, November comes around, I'll actually be paying attention more because It's not the regular season and the Astros are actually playing for something, and they'll be A-okay. You mentioned Altuve. He did leave yesterday's game early. We'll hear from Dusty Baker on what happened and what the issue is. Like I said before, it's thankfully not as bad as you might think when your star leaves the game early. Randomly, you're like, what the hell? Particularly baseball. Baseball's the one sport where you're never really sure, oh, the pitcher leaves after four pitches. That's scary.
Right.
That's the scariest thing in all of baseball, where your pitcher has to leave the game, and you're like, that's an elbow, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a shoulder. So, thankfully, it's none of those things for Altuve. Dusty Baker will tell us what the problem is on the other side. This is the audition. Dell here with Brad Kellner and RJ. We'll be back.
Blue and Red Rule. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the audition with Del Olale and the guy vying to be his sidekick, Brad Kellner.
He was feeling sick, and so that's why he called us out there. And we just took him out because we thought it was the best thing to do and for precautionary reasons. And like I said, he was feeling sick, and you can sort of see it. So, he's being evaluated by doctors, and, we'll let you know more tomorrow.
That's Dusty Baker explaining why Jose Altuve left the game, really. Is it a case of the bubble guts? What do you think sick means? Like, he's actually ill? Like, I don't know, there may be an actual illness, or was he like, oh, this isn't great, I got to go to the bathroom? What do we think it was for Jose Altuve last night?
He didn't have that Lamar Jackson hobble back to the dugout.
Where you're holding it. Yeah, everyone knows what that looks like.
Yeah, but I don't know what else it could have been. You said in the first segment, Dell, I was terrified. I mean, when the trainers have to come out mid-inning, whether it's a pitcher, whether it's a fielder, it doesn't matter. It makes you think the worst. And, of course, with Jose Altuve just coming back from injury, and then you think about what happened with Michael Brantley, right? Like, during his rehab, he gets hurt again, and now he stopped swinging. You think about what happened with Chaz McCormick. He comes back for one game, and then he has to sit down for the next few because he got hurt again, because he re-aggravated something. Like, my mind just went to the worst possible place, and it's like, oh, the Astros are losing this game, and they're going to lose Jose Altuve. It was a stressful couple of hours, and I didn't think it was a thumb issue, right? Because he wouldn't have left in the middle of an inning. He would have left right after a play, like if a ball hit him hard on the thumb or after a swing where it clearly rattled his thumb, then they would have come out there and taken him out. I was thinking a hammy or a quad or something soft tissue that was going to be like, well, here's 3 weeks to a month without Jose Altuve. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't wish bubble guts upon anyone. Definitely not Jose Altuve with all he's done for me.
But if it's the better alternative, I'll take it. Like I mentioned it in the first segment, the non-contact baseball injury always feels like a disaster because it's mostly a disaster in all the major sports. But at least we can pinpoint, oh, that's a knee. Oh, that is awful. In baseball, it's a Tommy John or it's a hamstring. In particular with baseball, you mentioned a three-week thing. We're just getting Altuve back, and now he could be gone. But that isn't the case. I do think it's funny, the prayer circle thing on Twitter. It's immediate. Let's all pray with the candles, and let's just hope our Lord and Savior Jose Altuve remains. And we'll see if he's back in the lineup immediately or it's actually an illness that hampers him for a bit. But if we're judging, we'll take an illness over an injury that holds him out for a week or two just because we want him in the lineup. Although, we know, Dubon has been really good in his stead. And I know how relaxed Dubon is because he's walking out and Altuve's walking it, or he's walking out to the field, Altuve's walking back into the dugout. And Dubon just, you know, takes Altuve's hat off. And Altuve's looking at him like, what are you doing? Mm. I gotta go. And Dubon's like, oh, yeah, you're leaving. Let me give you your hat back. That's a guy who's feeling pretty good about himself, I think, and rightfully so. He was a guy questioned because of the absence of Altuve due to the World Baseball Classic. And I think you couldn't ask for anything more from him for a part-timer who had to fill in for the best player in franchise history until Yordan gets like four more years.
Yeah.
But until that point, Altuve is the best player in franchise history. And Dubon's been certainly a capable replacement. We'll see if he's back in the lineup today with Altuve being out.
Yeah, I think he will be. And hey, Dubon's got more homers than Abreu this season.
Who doesn't?
Yeah,
There's everyone sitting in this room has as many home runs as Jose Abreu, and that's unfortunate for Jeff Bagwell. And as you mentioned in the first segment, his other, at least if we're going to pinpoint things he was allegedly responsible for, his other big signing in the offseason, Montero, is a disaster as well. So I've had these back and forths with the bench, not on the air, through text in our group chat about Bagwell's influence. Is he going to go down as like Isaiah Thomas? You remember when Isaiah Thomas took over the Knicks and it was a disaster?
Mm-hmm.
I think he was a personnel guy. Then he got forced to be the coach because James Dolan said you're ruining in the front office, so you're going to have to coach the players you want. It's only two players in, really, and there's actually a guy named the general manager. But how much influence do you think one Jeff Bagwell has? Does he, particularly when there's actually a general manager in place?
You're being nice. You're not throwing Michael Brantley in there.
Well,
I'd say all three of his acquisitions have been disastrous.
I don't want to do that because Brantley's been so good here until recently. But your point is made.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. Look, the good news, I think, from an Astros perspective is, yeah, you're right, there's a real GM in place, and Dana Brown is incredibly qualified. The job he did in Atlanta was spectacular, and he's already made some positive impact on the Astros organization, right? I love the Christian Javier extension that he was able to get done, hoping he could do the same with Fromber, hoping he could do the same with Kyle Tucker. Doesn't seem that likely, but we'll take what we can get. I said it in the offseason, Dell. I mean, I wasn't a fan of letting James Click go. Like, I don't know what more he could have done. Ultimately, I understand why it happened, right? Like, you can be great at your job, but if your boss doesn't like you, then okay, sorry, he's moving on. I feel like the Astros, and I felt like the Astros, were in a good enough spot as an organization where one offseason without a real GM wasn't going to kill them. Now, it feels like Jeff Bagwell tried.
He was like,
the best he could.
I'll test that. I'll test that, Brad.
A little hold my beer situation right there from Baggy. But the good news was, like, the Astros had so much of their World Series roster coming back. Like, there was only a couple of moves that Bagwell had to make. And it feels like, okay, even with one bad offseason, the Astros were still going to be fine as an organization. So I feel like Isaiah Thomas was there for longer. I think about Michael Jordan, too. Obviously not comparing Bagwell to MJ as a player. But, look, Bagwell's a Hall of Famer. He's an all-time great. And he's awful as an executive. Michael Jordan, the U.S. player in the history of the NBA, awful as an executive during his time in Charlotte. He was there for a number of years and just couldn't get out of his own way. So, yeah, I mean, I think those comparisons are pretty apt. Like, Bagwell is not going to get any other GM looks. And if that was his plan, if that's what he wanted to do ultimately in baseball, was to be a general manager or front office guy in any form or fashion, his first audition for that job was not good. So still think the Astros are going to be fine. I'd be terrified if Bagwell was still the GM and like, hey, this was the plan for here on out. But because it was only a 4 or 5 month experiment, I still feel like the Astros are in a good enough place to where he's not going to completely kill the future of this team. And I don't think the dynastic run the Stros are on is going to come to a quick end because of that.
You know, Isaiah and Michael Jordan went and convinced some other owner from a different franchise to let them run things. James Click, particularly franchises who weren't successful, you'd mentioned James Click, how it happened here when you know what works, you know what's been successful over this, since really 2015, how he convinced who he convinced to get that job, at least for the temporary time that he had it, will be something I don't understand, because you had a framework. You understood how things worked, and Jim Crane was still like, you know what? We're going to try being baseball. We're going to be old school baseball people. And Jeff Bagwell's kind of explained how or why he did what he did, why those decisions were made with Montero and Abreu. He's going to have to keep explaining them or stay off the broadcast, because it's not been great for him, because he's in there and his acquisitions have been terrible and been bad in moments where we needed them to be big. And he's had to sit there and wallow in it. I talked to Danny about this yesterday. Maybe it's because of what the highlights I heard, but in play, I don't know if I have a use for Jeff Bagwell in the broadcast booth. Between plays where he's talking about the game and explaining things, I'm good. Yeah. But his interjections where he's like, whoa, and yeah, and oh, awesome. I'm not.
He's a soundboard.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, literally, whenever a ball is hit, he's, ooh, oh, wow. Like, he does not let TK announce what's going on in the game without interjecting.
I get the guy and why you want him up there, the lore, the nostalgia. And if he wants to talk about certain situations in between pitches, I'm all good. But baseball has made it a little bit more difficult for that with the pitch clock and all the things they're trying to do to speed up the game. I don't know if I need. We could have a soundboard of Jeff Bagwell. He doesn't even have to show up. I'm sure there's someone in that booth as an engineer who could just hit buttons if he's going to do that during every play. Look at me, all the slander towards an Astros legend. I'm just saying, you're ruining my viewing experience. That's all.
His reputation has taken a hit over the last few months. Like, he's still an Astros legend, but I feel like now when you bring up Jeff Bagwell, people don't think about not what he did as a player, which was obviously spectacular. It's what he did as a general manager. And it's recency bias. Like, that's how we are as a society. If cooler heads prevail and you actually think about it, it's like, no, we still love Jeff Bagwell.
It was like a couple months of nonsense. So
we're
not going to let that outweigh what he was as a player. But don't ruin our favorite team.
Right, exactly. And like you said, man, he's sitting there and taking it in the broadcast booth. And I think Todd Callis, he did a good job asking about Jose Abreu on Monday. And then he didn't really have to ask about Rafael Montero yesterday, right? Montero,
it was plain,
extended the inning. He gave up 4 runs. And while Bagwell clearly had to do his job as an announcer and talk about what was going on there, I mean, it was almost like forcing a person going through a divorce to look at their wedding pictures in public. Like, that's what happened with Jeff Bagwell in the booth last night.
Except everyone told you not to marry this person.
Exactly, exactly. It's a perfect way
still did it.
To compare it. Yeah, so it's like, I think Bagwell's okay in the booth. Like, he does tell some good stories and he does provide some good insight, but just a couple of times a year. Like, I don't want him taking over for Blummer by any stretch of the imagination. And yeah, the soundboard stuff I could go without, right? Like, just let the play-by-play guy make the calls, and then you come in there with your analysis and you come in there with your stories. Don't like the over-the-topness from Bagwell, but I could tell, and I feel like you might be like this too, Astros fans are more pissed with Bagwell this year in the booth than they were last year just because of what happened in the offseason.
Yes. You had a bad offseason, and now, you know, you're messing up a good broadcast team, so you're 0-2.
Yeah.
Or to your point, it's if you include Brantley, Montero, Abreu, and now the broadcast, that's 0-4, which is kind of a stat line in a playoff
game. Like Jose Abreu. Oh, nice. That's even better.
Yeah.
That works too.
Yeah.
Well done.
Now, this guy is not an Astros legend or really a Rockets legend, but he wants to return. We're going to talk about him on the other side. No, not James. There's another former Rockets guard who actually believes and has stated he'll be a Rocket. So we'll talk about what that would mean and why the Rockets would bring in another older player who used to play here. This one is of a different caliber totally, and you hate him when he's not on your team. You may love him in a couple months. We'll talk about that on the other side.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Very highly.
Very high chance of you going back to Houston?
Very highly.
Of you going back?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think that was one of my, you know, decisions when, you know, when I got traded from the Lakers. The Houston was one of my, you know, but they told me, Pat, we don't need you right now. You know, you might not play. We need you to mentor young guys, blah, blah, blah. So I still wanted to play, so.
The audition continues on ESPN 97.5. Listen as these guys suck up to Dell for a chance at stardom. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Dell and today's suck up, Brad Kellner.
I don't like the term suck up. It's too pejorative. I like sycophant. Someone who, it's kind of the same thing. I just don't like the term suck up. Bad connotation. That is Patrick Beverly from the Patrick Beverly Podcast. Apparently, the Rockets are all in on former guards who are in their mid-30s, apparently, because James is 34, Patrick Beverly is 34. Patrick Beverly would be less intrusive as far as being a progress stopper. And if we're talking about guys who would instill whatever you believe culture to be, he might be the type. I don't know if Jalen Green is all in, would be all in on the Patrick Beverly experience. It's a tough one because Patrick Beverly is a guy you have to, how do I say, maybe tolerate. Maybe tolerate's the word.
It's a great word.
Yeah. And I think he might be a little much for the young Rockets.
I'm a fan of this.
I'm not against it. I just think it'd be interesting to see how that would all play out. Ime Udoka, his first year here, he brings in Patrick Beverly. And Patrick Beverly is what, beating up on Jalen Green in practice? Is he going to be brought in? Because apparently he's now more than willing to be a guy who's a mentor as opposed to, I guess he wanted to be like the eighth guy for the Bulls as they were trying to make the playoffs and made the plan instead.
Right.
Is he a additive guy if he is like waving a towel on the bench?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he could have good influence on the young players on this team. And you might be right. Jalen Green might not like the fire that Pat Bev's going to bring to practice every day, but I think he needs it, right? I think a lot of these young Rockets need it. I mean, Dale, I've seen more competitive fire from these Rockets on Twitter over the last week than I did throughout the entirety of the season. And you talk about whether or not James Harden would have a positive influence on these young guys. I actually think he would, but I understand the argument against that, right? I understand people's fear of bringing him back and what that might do to disrupt what's going on with the Rockets rebuild. But for Pat Bev, yeah, I mean, I think the Rockets need that competitive juice. I think they need that energy. I think they need a guy like that who's going to come in and just raise the floor. I think that's what he would do. He'd raise the floor of the team, but I also think he'd get guys to buy in a little bit more to what's going on right now. So I'd be in favor of Pat Bev coming back. And like you said, I don't think he would cause that ripple effect like some of the other potential guys who were being linked to the Rockets would.
There is something to be said about just having guys in your roster who don't suck, who can actually play in an NBA game and play important minutes in the game and not be someone who you have to bench because they don't know the ins and outs. And he would be, and the Rockets have plenty of guys who may be talented but just don't understand how to play NBA basketball right now. And getting more of those guys in the roster who actually want to be here, because we know Eric Gordon was on the roster, but he didn't want to be here. They've had that John Wall didn't want to be here. Yeah. He didn't want the role they wanted for him. And, you know, Patrick Beverly balked at it the first time. He told you he didn't want to be a guy who was just a mentor, and maybe he's more than ready to be that. I wonder how much the money would play into that. Hey, Pat, we'll give you 7 a year for a couple years just to sit there,
yeah.
I'm sure he would take it.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a great deal. I'm sure you would love to be in Houston for a bit. I don't disagree. But the James Harden question is interesting for me, and you said you may have a more positive take on it than others. I had this discussion with Danny yesterday, and I think maybe Monday too, about what that means, bring him in, what the Rockets see themselves as. So you bring in James Harden. It is a move to try to be competitive quicker than what you think the timeline is for your current guys if you left them alone and just tried to build stay with a young roster. Have you given your thoughts on the length of the deal? Because I don't really care about the money, mostly because it's not mine. And the other reason is you got to spend it on someone. And if you want to spend it on, it's really tough to say, but I guess it's franchise legend, I guess. Is he at that level? Is he a franchise legend? He won an MVP. He took him to conference finals. He would be one of those people who has his numbers in the rafters despite how he left. But if he wants to come back and all is made well and good, I guess that jersey will go up there. And James Harden, franchise legend, 10 years from now, he's sitting next to Hakeem watching Jalen Green play. That feels like where we're going at some point.
That jersey's going up there regardless of if he comes back.
Oh,
right?
I know that, but I think we're at a point now if he comes back
and
washes away the sins of pretending to be fat or actually be fat and getting out of here and asking out, he becomes one of those guys 10 years from now where he and Hakeem are being introduced at Rockets games as they sit next to each other. I think that's the trajectory for James. He apparently loves the city. He wants to play here. So I think we'll see that in the not too distant future after his career is over.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Dell. Just based on Twitter, it feels like James Harden would be better for his Houston legacy if he didn't come back to Houston. Because I don't think people want him back. And obviously his play has declined over the last few years. And there's reason to believe it's going to continue to decline as he gets more and more into his 30s. I feel like some Rockets fans think that James Harden's legacy could be tarnished by him actually coming back. And I don't know how many fans are even excited about the idea of him returning to this team. For your first question, look, I don't want to give him a four-year deal. Like, if someone out there is willing to give James Harden 4 years and pay him till he's 38, be my guest. That's fine. But if we're talking a two-year deal, maybe with an option for year three, then I'm all about it. Because you're right, he does make this team better. He does expedite the timeline of this Rockets rebuild. And I do think James Harden's going to be a positive influence on the young guys. Like, does he have the greatest work ethic in NBA history? No, of course he doesn't. The off-the-court stuff is what it is. The questions people have had about him are what they are, and they are absolutely fair. But what was James Harden? He was a top 10 pick who maximized his potential. He clearly lived up to the hype. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, that's what you want from Jalen Green, right? That's what you want from Jabari Smith Jr., right? That's what you want from whoever you draft number 4 overall in this year's draft, right? Like, you want those guys to maximize their potential and be great pros and be all-star caliber players. Like, is it realistic for all of them to become James Harden? No. Is it realistic for any of them to become James Harden? Probably not, but there are a lot of good things, maybe some bad things too. I'll listen to that. But there are a lot of really, really good things I think these young players can actually learn from James Harden. And he led the league in assists this last season, Dell. Like, I think he's going to set these Rockets players up for success.
Have you not heard that he wants to be more free in playing basketball? Does that not concern you when you talk? Look, this is not me getting after James as a player. I understand what he is and what he was, and still he's a productive player as long as you don't need him to take a big shot in the playoffs. But the Rockets are a bit away from that, so if the goal is to be a competitive regular season team and win some games, and maybe you don't want to drop another 60-loss season on Jalen Green's head, I get it.
Yep.
Because at some point, you get used to losing, and then I won't say you become a loser, but you just continue to lose games. I keep bringing this up because the talent level that the Rockets are accruing because of their draft picks, people think, well, eventually it'll all work out. Or you could be the Kings for a decade and a half and never make the playoffs and then finally put it together this year. So there are multiple paths forward, and I get it if you don't want to have Jabari Smith and Shingun and Jalen Green continue to lose and lose and lose and eventually go, hey, losing's not that bad. The money's still coming in. I get why you bring in players who can help you win some games. I do wonder if James Harden's of the mindset to go, you know what? My job here is not only to help these guys win, but to teach them how. I don't know. You can't talk to other players on other teams as far, because that'd be tampering, and we know that doesn't exist in basketball.
Never.
But if you could interview Tyrese, could you have like a reference with Tyrese Maxey, a young guard who was with James for a year and a half or so? was James a mentor to you? I would like to find out that information before I go all in, because if Tyrese Maxey is giving you rave reviews about what James Harden was, that kind of squelches some of my fears about him coming in and not only infecting the entire organization with, let's just say, a lackadaisical attitude towards winning, but a guy who might be a negative for the growth of your young players, particularly your young scoring guard who you put a lot into and are banking on. So, hey, Tyrese Maxey, I need a reference.
Yeah.
If you give me a reference and say, this guy got it and helped me in a major way, then I might be all in. But I don't think we're going to get a Tyrese Maxey reference.
No letter of recommendation.
I feel like Daryl Morey would take issue.
Yeah, I think
even,
you're right.
Even though he has a relationship with Rafael Stone, I don't think he's going to allow Rafael Stone to ask Tyrese Maxey about James Harden, because Daryl Morey, for one, wants James Harden back, which is one of the more interesting relationships in the last 15 years of sports. Because when you meet the dude as he gets off of PJ with your daughter, you know that they're close. And I can't this is the thing. I can't really foresee Daryl Morey letting him go. Despite the reports that if it's a foregone conclusion, Daryl Morey is tied, and he wants to be linked with James. Allegedly, he got rid of Doc Rivers because it was at James's behest, and he told Joel Embiid after he made the decision. So the centerpiece of your franchise was informed, not consulted.
Wow.
On getting rid of Doc Rivers.
I didn't even hear those rumors.
Allegedly. Because he was asked, what did Joel think about Doc Rivers being let go? He go, well, you know, I had to explain to him that and make him trust me that we're going to find the best coach for this team. So that doesn't sound like a guy who was told consulted about the next move.
It was an easy decision.
Yeah, I get it. That's why I don't get why the Suns are now putting Doc Rivers in your Final Four. What is it about Doc Rivers?
I don't know, man.
Well, he's got one title with a team that had three Hall of Famers on it. They all came together and got it done. And ever since that point, when he left the Celtics, he has underachieved. The Suns, who are trying to get over the top and got rid of Monty Williams, does Doc Rivers present himself as a guy who gets you over the top?
A perennial playoff choker. You're going from Chris Paul to Doc Rivers.
And the Suns, the last couple years, know a lot about playoff disappointment, so I get why Doc would fit in.
Yeah.
But he's not. Why are you pointing at it? Why is he in your Final Four?
Yeah, you said he's underachieved since he left Boston. He underachieved in Boston.
True.
Like, they only won one title with that
bunch. Yeah, they should have won more.
And what, the 2010, when they lost to the Lakers in seven games, they had a 10-point second-half lead in Game 7 and blew it.
Yeah,
and they're
up.
Then,
yeah, that's who he is. They're up 3-2, and he blows that. And he gets an awful shooting night from Kobe and can't take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Look. Credit, I'm not going to say, hey, don't go get your money, Doc. But I just don't get why the Suns, who think they're close and they're all in, go, you know what? I've watched Doc Rivers not win with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and the bunch in L.A., blowing a lead to the Rockets 3-1. I watched him lose to the Hawks. I watched him lose to the Heat. I watched him blow a 3-2 lead to the Celtics this past season. But you know what? Let's bring in Doc. Our playoff failures combined with his playoff failures will make it a positive because we're multiplying.
Yeah.
Negative times a negative.
Sure.
Except Philly just tried that. Daryl Morey had all those old Rockets, you know, I won't say they're clothed in failure, because getting to the conference finals and losing to the Warriors is not something that you should hang your head. Going 0 for 27 from 3 is an issue. But they tried the whole negative times a negative equals a positive. And no, it was still a negative. And now the Suns are looking at it too.
Players really like him. That's why he keeps getting these jobs. He's well-liked and well-respected around the league, but I think he's proven that he can't get it done at the highest level. So, yeah, that'd be a mistake for the Suns to make. I don't know what exactly they're doing. But, yeah, the whole James Harden-Daryl Morey relationship is an interesting one. Look, James Harden, he said what he said, right? He wants to go to a competitive team. He wants to have basketball freedom. Ultimately, we know what this is, Dell. Whoever gives him the best contract is where he's going to play.
Man is looking for a golden parachute.
That's it.
He's looking for that retirement plan, and I don't fault him because if someone's going to give it to him, I understand him taking it. I just don't know if all the things he's putting out there go together. I don't think a really good basketball team is still looking at James Harden going, you know what, we can give him 3 or 4 years, however many it will be, at nearly $50 million a year and go, he's going to get us over the top. Mm-hmm. He's proven otherwise. The Rockets are actually, as far as a place for him, kind of perfect, because there's not a lot of pressure. He has, well, you talk about what the fans think, but at least in the organization, there's a good feeling about him. Tillman has talked about that. It's a perfect place for him to have his basketball freedom and not feel the pressure of losing or winning. Just go out and play ball, James, and we're going to love it because you're going to make us relevant again.
Yeah. I can't quite figure out Rockets fans, Dale, when it comes to this whole James Harden situation, because people don't want him back because, well, he's a playoff choker. But if you don't bring James Harden back, you're going to lose 60 games again next season. Like, he's not going to win you a title. Get that in your head. Like, James Harden coming back here, you brought this up a few minutes ago. You're not going to be the Rockets you were when James Harden was in the prime of his career. He's going to raise your floor. He's going to get you back to relevancy. Hopefully, a couple of guys want to play with him, so more guys come in and make you a relevant franchise, and hopefully he develops some of your young core. So by the time he's gone or on his way out the door, your team is relevant and actually contending once again. If you don't bring him in and you just have no plans and you're like, nah, we'll be significantly better next year without James Harden, without really doing anything this offseason, then that's a mistake. Like, that's a mistake. So I can't quite figure it out. Like, if your reasoning for bringing James Harden in here is he's a playoff choker, then that's a bad reason to not bring him in, because that's not why this team would be bringing him in.
You won't have to worry about big games and him not showing up, just because that's not really the purpose, it feels like. Unless we see trades happen, then we'll have a different discussion about what the Rockets' potential season will be. The Rockets are talking about something old. We're going to move to something new and a little blue. I don't even feel good about doing that one. The Texans and OTAs have started. We're going to hear from D'Amico Ryans and what he thinks of C.J. Stroud and the progress there. And also some news regarding the starting quarterback for the Texans and how C.J. Stroud can go win that job. I'm not a fan of what was said. I get why D'Amico said it, but if what he said he believes and it comes to fruition, talk about lowered expectations. We'll talk about that and more. We still haven't gotten to the playoffs, the NBA Conference Finals, as the Celtics extend their season. We'll talk about that in a little bit as well. The Audition, Dell, Brad, RJ, we'll be back.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun
sports. CJ's been the same from the pre-draft process to now. Hard worker, very intelligent guy. He's a true competitor. So he's been the exact same guy. Nothing has changed. Been excited to see him out on the field working with his teammates. CJ has been doing an excellent job these past couple days.
Welcome back to The Audition with Del Olale, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now here's Del and today's teacher's pet, Brad Kellner.
That's right. The most likable co-host of the Wheelhouse joins us. The other two, I don't have an issue with them, but if you guys have heard, the rest of the lineup certainly does, except for Paul. Paul came in and goes, I don't care about anything. Don't worry.
I heard Paul yesterday praising Jake. He was so worried that he was going to get punished if he said anything bad about Jake, so he was sucking up to Jake for 2 hours yesterday.
I talked about this off there. I have a group chat with the clowns that are normally in this time slot, and one of them sent a DM from a listener who attributes them being suspended because of Jake. And let's say the listener wasn't using great words to describe Jake. Jake wouldn't appreciate the words being used. So apparently that particular back and forth has some legs. Is it true the bench got canceled because Jake is a sissy?
Sissy was the actual word used?
Yeah, I'm not making that up. The word sissy was used. So that, now, there's no response from the host in question, but that was the DM from a listener. So apparently the legs on this back and forth remain. And that's not that unfortunate, because I love internal strife. And frankly, I'm only here this week, so I don't have to deal with it. So
yeah.
I don't have an issue with it at all. Continue. I'll be listening with bated breath. So that was D'Amico Ryans talking about C.J. Stroud. He also went on to talk about the potential competition at the quarterback position. And it was really a general statement about the roster, the process with all our players to come out and improve and get better each day. Ryan said, when the fall comes, that's when we'll talk about starters and who are the best 11 men to go out there and help us win games. Look, I'm not surprised that the defensive-minded coach didn't come out and go, the rookie quarterback's our starter, get used to it. that's not a surprise in May. So I'm not going to overreact. I'm just going to say it just better be May talk. That's all.
Yeah.
Because if we're in August, which is what he kind of talked about, once we get into camp, that's when all those positions will be determined. If C.J. Stroud ain't the number one taking all the reps in August until the season begins as a starter, then we can start to have questions about maybe C.J. Stroud, maybe Bobby Slowick, maybe D'Amico Ryans. But those are long, and that's in the future, because I just believe this is talk you say in May just because you're not, quote-unquote, handing anything to anyone.
Yeah, this is a normal bit, right? Coaches do this all of the time. You see it in the pros. You see it in college. Like, you got to go out there and earn your starting job. And I got a hunch D'Amico is going to be consistent with that throughout the entirety of his Texans tenure, where, hey, even if you were a top-five pick, even if you are a first-round pick, even if there's no obvious competition at the position that you play, you're going to have to earn it. You're going to have to go out there and actually land this job on your own. So I think this is just coach speak. I'll be honest with you, Dell. I'll take it even a step further. I don't care what happens in training camp. Like, C.J. Stroud should be getting the first-team reps, all of the first-team reps in training camp, because I think all rookies transitioning from Saturdays to Sundays need as many reps as they possibly can get. But I really won't care about what the quarterback competition, if you believe that it truly is one, and I don't, looks like until we get to week 1 against Baltimore. Like, it's an unmitigated disaster if C.J. Stroud is not this team's starting quarterback to open the regular season. If he doesn't start the first preseason game, that's fine. If he doesn't start training camp as the number one, that's fine. If he doesn't start week 1 of the regular year, then it's a big, big problem.
It means you miscalculated in multiple ways, and all the slander that people are giving you for trading. Look, I know the Texans would probably tell you, hey, the trade was to make sure we got C.J. because we wanted both players. But what is being said is, no, you already had C.J. Stroud, and then you gave up a king's ransom for a rookie defensive end who isn't considered an all-world player. No one thinks he's one of the Bosas. He'll have to prove that he is the next great pass rusher. So if we're listening to NFL podcasts or NFL media, everyone is torching the Texans for the compensation they gave, although they'll probably tell you, hey, no, that was a package deal. You can think of it as trading up for Will Anderson, but really we're making sure we got our quarterback. But that's not what people are saying. And if C.J. Stroud's not the starter, that noise will only get louder. Because yeah. I listen to podcasts, and it's like, you know what, guys? Most of them don't have a great impression of C.J. Stroud. They think, okay, he's okay, but I mean, even if he was the guy you're trading up for, people are questioning giving that up for him. They're thinking, particularly when Caleb Williams and Drake May are the next in line. And mostly it's about you're going to be bad anyway. That's going to be a top-five pick you're giving up because you gave up your own pick. So it would be – now, PR doesn't really matter, but it would be a disaster, like you said, if a guy not named C.J. Stroud is starting. And speaking of that, one guy who is allegedly in that competition – is Davis Mills, and this is what he had to say yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm competing for that starting job. I mean, since I've been drafted in the NFL, I've been in a competition. I don't think anything's going to change, but, I mean, it's been great getting to know CJ so far. He's an extremely hard worker, and it'll be good to see how we go out there and compete every day and make each other better.
Well, fine.
He knows, right?
He's got to. He's got to, right? He's got to believe that by the time final cuts are made, maybe he'll get traded before then. He's got to believe he is most likely to get traded. Mm. If someone looks at what he's done and goes, you know, we could use a good backup.
Yeah, somewhere in that neck, he's got to have the knowledge of the fact that he's not going to be this team's starting quarterback. And I'm with you. Like, he's QB3. They just changed that rule across the NFL where you can now dress three quarterbacks on Sundays. But if the Texans can get something in return for Davis Mills, if a team views him as a QB2, then, yeah, I think there is a chance that he is off the roster by the time we get to the actual season. I got no problem with Davis Mills answering that the way that he did, right? That's the way that he's supposed to answer. And look, I'm a believer that competition breeds character. Like, I don't want Case Keenum or Davis Mills just keeling over and saying, oh, CJ, here, it's your job. We're not even going to try. You can take this thing, and you don't even have to work to get it. And I appreciate that answer from Davis Mills, and I appreciate that he's coming in with that mindset. And I know Case is going to do the exact same thing. But ultimately, at the end of the day, like you said, Dale, it's a disaster if CJ Stroud can't win the job. And look, let's be real. I don't think it's a real competition. Like, CJ Stroud can be a B player in training camp, and Davis Mills can be a B-plus, A-minus player in training camp. It doesn't matter. C.J. Stroud is going to be the starting quarterback.
It would have to be something where C.J. Stroud can't get out plays. Like, he's stumbling, and he can't take snaps from center because all he did was play in the shotgun at Ohio State and he never learned. The offense would have to be unable to function. That's the only way. And even still, I'd run him out there. Hey, we're just going to play out of the shotgun.
Yeah.
I can't find any scenario where I go, you know what? Yeah, he's been too bad. And I really care. I really need Kenyon Green to feel like he's got a shot to win. And Davis Mills is the guy he believes in. There's nothing that can be done that can convince me that C.J. Stroud should not play. And like we said, this is May and DeMeco's doing what he has to do. But when the regular season begins and they're playing Bryce Young, I want quarterback one versus quarterback two. That better be the matchup.
Yeah. And get rid of Bobby Slowick if it can't happen. Hire somebody from Ohio State to hold up those giant poster boards with random sports logos and old celebrities' faces on the sideline and run that up-tempo offense. Like, change your offense to make it work for C.J. Stroud, because I can't go another year of watching Davis Mills play football.
And speaking of that, the Ohio State thing, I mean, the formula for getting your young quarterback to perform is go get him a big-time wide receiver. Marvin Harrison Jr. would be nice here.
Oh yeah,
that if we're pulling that thing where we draft the quarterback and then we draft his college wide receiver, like what happened in Philly, what happened in Cincinnati, what happened in Miami, the next thing should be Marvin Harrison Jr. should be a Texan.
Well, the good news is the Browns are going 4-13 next year, so it's going to happen.
Well, yeah, speaking of disasters, if Deshaun is the player he was last year,
oh man,
I don't think anyone in Cleveland survives that particular trade. That's going to wrap up the first hour. By the way, I don't ever give out the number because usually I get it wrong. But I have written it down. So 713-780-3776 is the number. So if you want to call in to the audition, please do. We'll get back to the Astros. The news there, not great last night as far as the win-loss record, but you did get some good news, relatively speaking, about Jose Altuve. We'll update you on that. We will actually get to the NBA playoffs. It hasn't been a thing here for a while, but there is actually competitive basketball going on, so we'll talk about what happened last night as the Heat failed to sweep the Celtics. The Celtics still alive in that series. But hey, good, I guess. Maybe we'll get a competitive series. Game 5 is in Boston. A team so inconsistent that you could probably pretty much see them losing by 15 on their home floor to get knocked out of the playoffs, just because that's who they are. They haven't won a game at home in this series so far. We'll see what they've got tomorrow. But the audition, Dell, Brad, RJ, we'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.